They are proud to be part of the Wenatchee community, and they thank you for your support. Learn more about services at childrenshomesociety.org.
This is The Agenda from News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern affecting you are open for discussion. And now your host, Michael Knight.
Twelve 15 at News Radio 560 KPQ. Good afternoon. Time for another show called The Agenda. My voice makes it through the whole show. I have doubts. Okay, but let's consider this. If a tree falls in the forest, does anyone hear it? And does it matter? I mean, doesn't a tree always fall somewhere, whether anyone's listening or not? And if that's true, as the old saying implies, then someone must be listening for a potential sound to be heard. It does not prevent the tree from falling, silently or otherwise. And as far as I conclude, it's not the tree that falls, it's gravity that makes it fall. And gravity doesn't require anyone to listen to it or to combine with the biomass of a tree and the always reliable forest floor for any branch of any tree to just leap into the forest air and crash to earth. If it's a fall of 5 feet, just a murmur. A fall of 500 feet, well, that's another matter. The owls, the mule deer, the Sasquatch, and the Komodo dragons will all react, if only for a moment, to the official noise of a tree falling in the forest and making a hell of a row. Now, let's go to that fat, overgrown forest and see if a few less trees, if a few less bushes, if the less vines and shrubs and various undergrowth can be modified, cleared out, to cut and to transform an unhealthy forest into a plan for the future. For the future of our forests. Tonight with my very special guest, Holly Craik from the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest. You guys are going to finally do a plan to change 75,000 acres of overgrown Wenatchee forest into something that will look like the forest of the future, won't it?
It will. We are just in the earliest stages of analyzing four watersheds north of the Lake Wenatchee Plain area and looking to put several thousand acres within those watersheds on a track towards wildfire resilience and greater forest health.
Well, let's describe what it looks like now. How does it look?
So right now we've got what we fairly typically see across central Washington, which is quite dense, overstocked. We have streams that aren't functioning as they should. We've got a fairly dense road network. We just have a lot of opportunities to do some restoration actions to help really help increase the forest health of that area.
Now, 75,000 acres is a big plot. Who's going to be working on this with you? Do you have other stakeholders who are going to be helping out?
We do, absolutely. So that's one of the most unique parts about this project is that we are working directly with the North Central Washington Forest Health Collaborative, and that includes representatives from Chelan County to local landowners to Lake Wenatchee Fire and Rescue to the state DNR and Boggan Brothers. Conservation Northwest. You have multiple voices at the table, all helping to inform and work with us on this project.
Now, it's not easy clearing 75,000. It's not easy clearing 1 acre, for that matter. What's the technique that you're going to use, and what's the forest supposed to look like when you're finished?
So that's still to be determined. We're still in the earliest phases of this project, and that's part of what environmental analysis and this process is about. Is understanding what's out there, the existing condition of the watershed and the forest and the ecosystem, and then looking at places where we have an opportunity to strategically invest funds and resources to do perhaps prescribed fire or thinning or replace undersized culverts for fish passage or, you know, what are the opportunities out there on the landscape that can make it the forest that we want to have and that will work for future generations.
Someone might think that a dense, heavy, overgrown forest might be healthy, but in fact, that's just the opposite, isn't it? And why is it unhealthy to have a dense forest?
So really what we have seen over the past several decades and what the best available science is telling us is that what we often think of as normal, because it's the way that we've experienced the dry forest, ponderosa pine type forest predominantly, in our lifetime and in our parents' lifetime and even our grandparents' lifetime, are really a result of fire suppression. They were never designed to function that way, but through a combination of policy and social pressure and the belief at the time, we thought that fire should be taken out. And so what happens when you remove an essential part of that ecosystem, it breaks down. It doesn't function like it should. And so what you have is just an incredible upgrowth of density of trees. But then you also change the composition of trees, and you have trees that are fire-dependent, that need fire to survive, fire-adapted, that are well-suited to it, and other trees that aren't. And it just really changes the composition and the density of what's out there. So when it gets to the level, the overstocking that it is, when you have insects or disease or a wildfire come through, it reacts in really catastrophic or devastating ways. And I think we've seen that summer after summer in central Washington.
Can you describe what sort of tree would actually respond to a forest fire and actually become healthier, or in some ways that would complete its life cycle in one way or another?
So a ponderosa pine is a classic example, where ponderosa pines are fire adapted, and their bark is actually specifically designed to be able to withstand frequent low intensity fires. In that mostly ponderosa pine type ecosystem, the historic return interval, which is how often fires naturally supposed to come through, is about every 5 to 25 years. So imagine, you know, every 10 years or so, a fire would come through, low intensity, natural lightning strike. It would just, you know, burn through, traveling on the grass and any dead and down material on the forest floor. And it would also raise what we call the tree canopy and remove those ladder fuels that would allow a fire on the forest floor to move up into the canopy. And that's where you get tree mortality and stand replacing type of fires. So a ponderosa pine forest is designed to have this really patchy mosaic type feel. Think of like a grandma's quilt, right, where it's not all the same thing. It doesn't look all the same. You've got some areas of big trees, you've got some areas of small trees, you've got some open meadows, but those are all functioning and a result of fire frequently coming through on the landscape at low intensity.
And then when we have the example of the megafires and burning through a forest, does that leave the forest more healthy or does it destroy it?
So it changes it. And fire is one of those things, just like water or air, that is neither fundamentally good or bad. It is an agent of change, right? And so when we have a megafire come through, it is reacting to what it finds there on the landscape. It's reacting to 100 years in most places of fuel buildup, of dense woody vegetation, of down and dead material on the forest floor. And so it's burning as it would if you know, didn't have fire coming through frequently. So what you're left with oftentimes is a fundamentally changed ecosystem that will take much longer to get back to a functioning state for water resources and that kind of thing. And often in the social side of things, we see increased sedimentation, we see debris flows, we see seed banks destroyed, so native plants have trouble coming back into that area. So fire itself is a good thing in most of these ecosystems, but when it hits that super dense buildup of a century of fuels out there or more, it reacts in ways that can be received as pretty harmful to the people and the communities who, and wildlife and all kinds of other resources who love and utilize that landscape.
You're calling this project the Upper Wenatchee Pilot Project. How did you choose this area and where is it actually, so people know?
Yep, so this is located just north of the communities of Lake Wenatchee, north of Plain, that's in Chelan County in central Washington. This is really a result of the 2014 and 2015 fire seasons, where we heard from lots of community members and lots of local elected officials that really wanted some strategic investments in places where the wild lands of our national forest met communities, and they were at risk for the next mega fire, right? So this area is something that is important to not only the Forest Service, but it's also important to a high-priority watershed for the State Department of Natural Resources, Chelan County, our local partners there in the community. This particular area just really made sense because there's so much fire that has happened around it in the past several decades, but very little fire within this 75,000 acres. So if we can treat it and restore it and have it functioning well, both in terms of water and roads and fire resilience, we have a chance to change the future of how fires will play out on that 75,000 acres, but also within the community and the state and private lands that surround that area as well.
So is this national forest land?
It is, yeah. So the 75,000 acres, that planning area, almost entirely is within the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest.
I know this is an experiment, and I don't know if it's ever been done before to actually clear and create a healthy forest out of one that's dense and overgrown and unhealthy. Are you going to do it all in the same way, or will you be experimenting in different ways to clear a forest?
So we have been trying different techniques, both in terms of how we may apply prescribed fire, if that's one of the restoration tools that we end up utilizing, if culvert replacement or removing fish barriers is part of it. Same thing with thinning, right? Science is constantly emerging. Industry is constantly changing and moving forward, which is part of the success, the early success already of this project is by working directly with conservation groups and working directly with industry and having all of those voices at the table, we can help select, you know, the best choices and utilize the best science to pick those types of treatments, right? So whether we use, you know, a particular type of prescribed fire or whether it makes sense to do aerial ignition on a certain point, or whether we should do a ground-based thinning system. What should we do with the biomass that's left over? Are there going to be firewood opportunities? All of those things are still yet to be determined for this project, which is part of why it's so important for folks, if they value this type of work or are interested in this particular landscape, these particular watersheds, to get involved at this stage and lend your voice to this project now. Because a lot of those choices are still yet to be made and be analyzed.
So what sort of public comment are you looking for?
Yeah, so the best thing that a member of the public or an organization could do to have a meaningful comment is to really think about what values they have out there on the land, what things do they really hold highly and want us to look at changing, or that they want to stay the same. Think about how they use that land or their concerns about that land. Maybe somebody's really passionate about salmon and wants us to, you know, consider this, you know, particular type of restoration treatment. Maybe somebody is really concerned about access and sedimentation and wants us to consider a particular aspect of that type of work. So all of that, we will review those comments that come in from the public and organizations and utilize those to help with the analysis and the eventual final decision.
Can you explain the ecological connection between a healthy forest and healthy wildlife and healthy waterways?
So they're all connected. What we find is that what happens on the landscape itself, what happens to, you know, the trees and the meadows, is directly related to the water that flows through it and the aquatic habitat. You know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, essentially, in that it's all tied together. And so, for example, when we see a fire come through, not only does that change dependent on how hot it burns. Not only does that change the terrestrial landscape and changes the type of wildlife that would find that area as suitable habitat, but it also changes how we recreate in that area. It changes how the water functions, sedimentation in the streams. It functions, it changes, can change salmon habitat. It's all connected. So when we start to restore or look at a path forward for restoration, we're looking at all of those things and how they're interconnected and tied to each other, but also tied to the people and the community who recreate on or value or make their livelihood from this land as well. So it's not just the natural resources or just the people or just fish or just fire. It's all tied together, and that's part of what this project is about.
We're talking about the 75,000-acre project near Greater Lake Wenatchee, looking for a change that's going to make this a healthy forest over time. What's the forest being used for now? Is it too dense for recreation, or how is it being used?
So there are currently some popular recreation areas there. There's several, you know, campgrounds. Obviously, it's close to Lake Wenatchee, which is a beloved recreation spot for folks. There are some trails through there. There's also some popular backcountry hunting areas as you get higher up in elevation. And then there's some, you know, traditional uses as well. Things like huckleberries and other forest products that folks might utilize that area for.
And what about the wildlife? What are they, in what numbers do we have, and what species?
So, you know, typical wildlife distribution in that area. You've got some critical habitat for some endangered species as well. So you have everything from, you know, mule deer to steelhead, and you've got some owl habitat, and you've just got a traditional kind of mix of aquatic and terrestrial species that you would find across most of the Cascades.
That's Holly Craik with the Okanagan Wenatchee National Forest. We're talking about the Upper Wenatchee Pilot Project, which is an incredibly incredibly venturesome project of 75,000 acres being turned into a healthy forest from a dense and unhealthy one. And it's a project that's beginning now. And if you have comments about it, you can make them to the National Forest. We'll come back and continue our conversation with Holly Craik after these words on News Radio 560 KPQ.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
Testosterone, promoting greater increases in muscle size and twice the reduction of body fat percentage than exercise alone. Plus, an amazing 64% increase in nitric oxide, which can be handy in the gym and in the bedroom. Take your manhood to the max by trying your first 30-day bottle.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
News Radio 560 KPQ, Michael Knight, and my very special guest, Holly Craik, from the Okanagan Wenatchee National Forest. We're talking about the Upper Wenatchee Pilot Project, which is an extraordinary project that many people around the nation, I'm sure, or throughout the western states, will be following. A way to convert 75,000 acres into a healthy forest from a dense, unhealthy, at-risk, severe wildlife forest. And that's something that's not going to be easy to do. I thought about you talking about the biomass, and I was lying in bed last night thinking, 75,000 acres, so that's 1 ton of biomass per acre? No. Got to be 2 tons per acre. I said, no, not always. From 2 to 5 tons per acre. Now, you multiply that times 75,000, and you've got tons and tons of wood and brush and growth and vines and dead trees. What are you going to do with all that?
You know, that's a great question. And that is one of the fundamental reasons why we're so pleased to have our collaborative partners, particularly on the industry side of things, as well as our local elected officials, to really help think through that type of conundrum of, you know, what do we do with all of the product, the woody material coming off the forest, that may or may not have a traditional kind of timber, lumber mill marketable value, right? And so we're really looking for those type of creative solutions, opportunities to perhaps do what we call some stewardship contracting, where, you know, we use the proceeds from our more traditional type of thinning sale, commercial thinning sale, to pay for that removal of the biomass. Opening things up for firewood cutting opportunities is a small but really locally important thing for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of homeowners across Chelan and other areas who heat their homes almost exclusively with firewood in the winter. So there's lots of ways that we can approach that kind of problem and come up with some really innovative, creative solutions. And that's part of the pilot nature of this project, is to rethink and reevaluate some of those core questions.
Especially if there's an opportunity for this to actually pay for some of the project. It seems like with tons and tons of biomass, you've got plywood, you've got particle board, you've got Presto logs. I can't think of, it's an infinite number of products that could be made from all this wonderful wood that needs to be cleaned.
It could be. And I think one of the important things is the scope of the project. We're definitely analyzing that 75,000 acres, but that doesn't necessarily mean that 75,000 acres will all have the same types of treatments. That's part of the early phases of this project, is deciding where would be the right places, both ecologically and economically and, you know, from a sustainable standpoint, to put those commercial thinning sales. Where does it make sense to do prescribed fire? So we've got a lot of tools in the restoration toolbox to really help these watersheds function the way they should and help protect our communities. But not all of the tools will be used all of the time on every acre. And that's part of what we're going through this process and analyzing.
The problems that you're facing there near Lake Wenatchee are in existence throughout all the western states. Any state that's had mega fires, and who knows, maybe it'll reach to Ohio and New York one day. Are they watching what you're doing, or are you watching them? Is anybody else trying a project like this? Has it been done elsewhere successfully?
So speaking at the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest level, we are continually trying to be a learning organization and really committed to learning lessons from other districts. What worked well in, you know, a restoration project in Natchez, or maybe a new commercial thinning system that worked well in the Light project in Tenasket, and being able to pull that knowledge or that new technological innovation or that new science, being able to pull that into this project. So we really want to move through planning our legal requirements in terms of the Environmental Policy Act as smoothly and as efficiently as we can, so that we can get to that really critical implementation on the ground, the actual culvert replacement, barrier removal, thinning, prescribed fire, all of those restoration tools that we might use as a part of this project, and that our communities desperately need and really want to see. So all of those things could be at play, and learning lessons from other areas is definitely a part of the pilot nature of this project as well.
You're going to make an environmental analysis before you begin, and that's due in the fall of 2019. How do you write that, with not knowing exactly what you're going to what the results will be?
So this is a part of what we call the planning process, and part of the pilot nature of this particular project is that this has actually been contracted out. So it is not Forest Service employees who are doing the environmental analysis. So those staff are then freed up to work on other critical forest priorities and work. So by contracting it out, we're changing some of where our staff are focusing and the work that we're doing, but certainly meeting our requirements in terms of the law, policy, regulation that we have to fit in. So in part of the planning process, there's doping, which is the phase that we're in now for the next 30 days, and the comment period for that opened on the 25th. So for the next 30 days, folks can write in their comments and lend their voice very early on to this project. Then we will take those comments and together with the contractor sit down and analyze those, as well as analyze the data that we have gotten from the landscape itself. We've done some pretty advanced LIDAR data flow in the area and, you know, gotten tree densities and all kinds of really neat scientific data back, looking at the condition of the watershed, all of that type of stuff. And that gives us what we call our existing condition. So a snapshot in time, what does it look like right now? And then from there, we will put out the next step, which is that draft that you mentioned coming out, hopefully in the fall, a draft environmental analysis, which is the public's next time to formally comment on the project. And it says, hey, this is what we see out there, and these are the tools in the toolbox that we think we could use to put it on a track towards restoration. And we come up with a couple different alternatives, a couple different options. And then the next thing that happens, yeah, go ahead, Michael.
No, you go ahead.
Okay. So the next thing that happens is, again, you know, opportunity for public comment, public engagement. We really want to hear folks' voices. And again, we take that input and that feedback. And then the next thing that happens is a final environmental analysis and a draft decision. So the local district ranger considers those two rounds of public input. He or she is considering the environmental analysis, both the draft and then the final refined. The final is a more fine-tuned, polished, considers all of the voices that we've heard, builds on the draft, and then he or she issues a draft decision that says, based on everything that we've heard, all the best science, all the voices that we were able to utilize, here's the path forward that I have selected. Here's the tools in our toolbox that we're going to use. And then there's an objection time period where the public or organizations can object. And then pending resolution of that, the district ranger would issue a final decision. And that's the moment when implementation can begin, when we've gone through that environmental process, that community engagement process, and we've said, here's the tools in the toolbox we're going to pick up. Here's the locations out there on the ground we're going to do it. And then for the next decade or so, we're out there doing that work on the landscape itself. And that's the Cliff Notes version of NEPA.
I get NEPA. Where did that come from?
NEPA. It's an acronym for the National Environmental Policy Act.
Oh, I didn't realize. In my imagination, Holly Craik, I imagine that a lot of this would be done by hand, that Conservation Corps people would be going bush to bush, tree to tree, because you can't really bring in backhoes and caterpillars, can you? Or can you use heavy equipment without really destroying the delicate nature of the forest?
So it depends. You know, a lot of what we utilize when we actually start talking about implementation, for example, is a list of what we call best management practices. So, for example, in the Central Cascades on the forest, we do almost exclusively commercial thinning. Happens in the wintertime because that really minimizes soil disturbance and sedimentation to our streams and waterways, where a ton of our communities get their clean water from. But that's also very important for Pacific Northwest fisheries and that kind of thing. So there's little examples like that, where utilizing those best management practices, we can achieve a great deal of really good, important restoration work, and at the same time really minimize some of the negative impacts that have been traditionally associated with that work.
That's Holly Craik from the Okanagan Wenatchee National Forest. We're talking about the Upper Wenatchee Pilot Project, which is an incredibly adventuresome 75,000-acre project near Great Lake Wenatchee, looking to create a thin and natural forest from a dense and unhealthy one. We'll be back to talk with Holly and finish our conversation right after these words on News Radio 560 KPQ.
Hey, it's me, Uncle Dave, from the Big Rock Show. Let me introduce you to Chad. Chad,
or of AAA. Call 800-JOIN-AAA or visit AAA.com today and save $10 off a new membership. AAA, heroes of the highway. AAA reminds you to use a designated texter to avoid distraction.
News Radio 560 KPQ, I'm Michael Knight. My very special guest is Holly Craig. She's with the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest. We're talking about the Upper Wenatchee Pilot Project, which is a real adventure to transform 75,000 acres of national forest into a healthy, natural forest the way it would have been had nature had her way. What would be the downside, Holly, if we did nothing to this forest and other forests that are dense and unhealthy?
That's a great question, Michael, and I think that certainly any resident of Central Washington can see summer after summer after summer of what happens with continued inaction in these dry forest ecosystems. We see communities at risk. We see summer after summer of hazardous air quality that affects some of our most vulnerable residents. We see great harm potentially to the tourism industry, which again a lot of our communities can be dependent on. So we're really talking about a holistic impact from wildfires that goes far beyond the natural resource component alone. It really is something that has shaped the character of so much of the communities of Pateras and Twisp and Lake Chelan, and you know, you can pretty much pick an example in the recent decade or so, or even before that, and find folks in our communities who have been touched in some way by wildfires and their larger impacts. So every acre that we treat, or the related outcomes that put an entire watershed on that track towards forest health and being more resilient to wildfires and diseases and insects, is what I like to think of as eating the elephant one bite at a time. So we have millions of acres across Central Washington in need of restoration and forest health, but we can't treat a million acres all at one time. So we're going to start in communities where we've got that opportunity for strategic investments. The Mission Project up in the Methow is a good example. The Light Project in Tenasket, Little Crow down in Natchez. There's these investments that we are making together with our partners of where to place the planning resources and capacity and then the implementation resources and capacity, because the option to do nothing is to continue the status quo, and I don't think any of us want that either for ourselves today or something that we want to see for our kids and our grandkids. We want them to be able to experience natural resources and clean water and clean air and wildlife and everything else that we value about this incredible landscape in much the same ways that we did. And these type of restoration projects like Upper Wenatchee are part of the solution to make that happen.
It's a big project and it's a big deal, and you're asking for the public's input. You'll be on hand to answer questions on March 12th. Can you tell us the details?
Absolutely. So public engagement is another thing that we are doing in some unique and different ways as a part of this project. So we will be having an open house, a public meeting type event coming up on Tuesday, March 12th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Lake Wenatchee Rec Club. We will be on hand both to give a formal presentation and answer questions that folks have, but our staff will also be available and on hand to do one-on-one specific follow-up if folks have specific questions about, say, prescribed fire or hydrology or engineering or something like that. So we'll definitely be on hand to answer those questions. But we also recognize that a lot of landowners in that community and people who recreate there but might not be available on a Tuesday night or live further away. So we're also going to make this available on Facebook Live via the Forest Facebook page so that folks who aren't able to be there in person still have an opportunity to hear firsthand from us about what the project is and how they can lend their voice to it. Also uniquely, we designed an interactive map that folks can see the roads, they can see the sensitive fish habitat, they can see the risk of crown fire, They can see the historical fires that have come through that area. A lot of the type of resources and things that we are going to be considering and looking at, those values, are available to the public. So even today, anyone who's listening to this could follow up and check out that story map and see for themselves where that 75,000 acre area is and the different types of resources and things that we're going to be considering.
That's Holly Craig from the Okanagan Wenatchee National Forest. We thank her so much for the information on this big project at Lake Wenatchee.
James Marshall shares why Steve Schindelli and Taylor Mortgage are his go-to mortgage team.
I've actually gotten the opportunity to experience Taylor Mortgage twice.